I am unwilling to give up, that I will start over from scratch as many times as it takes to get where I want to be.
You just want to make sure you will get knocked down, but just make sure you don't get knocked out.
So your only choice should be go focus on what you can control.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Kara Golden Show. Join me each week for inspiring conversations with some of the world's greatest leaders. We'll talk with founders, entrepreneurs, CEOs, and really some of the most interesting people of our time. Can't wait to get started. Let's go. Hi, everyone. It's Kara Golden from The Kara Golden Show, and I am so thrilled to have my next guest here. I've been wanting to get him on the show for a while, and finally worked out. So I'm really, really thrilled to have Eric Ryan here, who is a co-founder of many companies. You may know him, probably the most well-known is Method, but he's now the co-founder and CEO of an incredible company called Cast. He's also been busy doing a few other brands that you may know, including Ollie, Welly as well. And he's a disruptor. He's a brander. He's entered industries that are needing innovation when people didn't even know they were needing innovation. I've so admired Eric for a while. He's also a Marin County fellow founder, entrepreneur. So thrilled to have him here. So welcome, Eric.
Thank you for having me. I feel tired after hearing all of that has been going on, as well as chasing three kids. And I love the fact that we are both neighbors and we both love making little physical objects.
Yeah, no, definitely. So I want to hear a little bit more about your backstory. First of all, I read your book. It was years ago that your book came out, right? And I've read it a few times. I mean, it's really so, so inspirational. But tell me a little bit about who you were as a kid. Who was Eric?
Super annoying to both my parents, neighbors, and anybody else I was trying to sell something to. You know, I was really, I don't know if it's lucky or unlucky, but in the third grade, I knew what I wanted to be, which was an entrepreneur. So I was that kid who was always working on a business plan or selling a new idea. I did everything from making and selling buttons, you know, with those like really bad, like stock catalog of, to putting people's photos into it, to trying to make hockey nets out of PVC. And even those inventor submissions, I would constantly send my ideas in. So from a very early age, I knew what I wanted to do, which was to start stuff.
That's amazing. But you went into advertising, right?
Yeah, I think I read so many books on entrepreneurs as a kid. And my big takeaway was the chances of success on your first try was pretty, pretty low. And so my belief was I should establish my career, create a little bit of a safety net before I would have the confidence to try to launch my first company. So it started in advertising in London.
That's wild. So that was your first job right out of school?
First job, super lucky. I got an internship at an agency in London that had this thing called a planning department. And the principals were Irish. I had an Irish last name. I think they enjoyed seeing how drunk they could get me at the pub during lunch breaks. But I fell into this thing called account planning, which is what you live between consumer insight and creativity. And it's kind of been my magic trick of my career ever since.
That's wild. So you were in advertising for a while. And then what was the plunge into entrepreneurship? I mean, how did you decide like, okay, now it's time. And what was it?
Yeah, it was really falling in love with an idea and having the confidence to follow it. Like I said, I always had ideas. My colleagues would make fun of me. I think I sent Richard Branson when I was living in London an idea for ultimately what became Vitamin Water. So I was always like churning on ideas. And, you know, the concept for Method really through a series of like confidence building steps, you know, led me to take the leap and to do it. I think there's a myth that entrepreneurs are risk taker. Malcolm Gladwell wrote this great piece years ago that actually successful entrepreneurs are not risk takers. They look for sure bets. Mm-hmm. And that was very much the case for me of once I landed the concept for Method, I fundamentally believed it was a sure bet, but I knew the probability of executing it to success was really, really low.
That's, and so for people who aren't familiar with method, they've been living under a rock or in some faraway island with no communication, no Target stores. So share a little bit more about why that product was different.
Yeah. I mean, at the time, there's, you know, so I love, and I've been doing over and over, I love finding these like really big categories that have missed what I would call a cultural shift. And so that was the model I was working on for Method. So I just started looking at that home clean aisle. And this is back, like really dating myself, but, you know, at the turn of the century in 2000. And it was a sea of sameness. You know, everything looked pretty much the same and was all pretty ugly, right? And so the first clue was like, huh, you look at a dish soap more than you use it. And this was the time like lifestyle of the home was really taking off. What if we position these products as lifestyle products and almost more like decor in your home? But there was a problem with that, which is at the time you were asked to pollute when you clean, you were asked to use poison to make your home healthier. So we were going to leave little bottles of pretty poison on everybody's countertop. So there was a culture, second culture shift, which was sustainability. And so what Adam,
how often have you thought about learning a new language only to be stopped by that memory of yours from the last time you tried to learn a language when it didn't go so well? Okay, maybe it wasn't a language that you were interested in learning, or perhaps all those poorly written textbooks in your sixth grade class weren't that well written after all. I have a great tip for you. It's called Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program around, available on desktop or app. No matter where you choose to learn it or what platform you choose to learn on, Rosetta Stone works, and it truly immerses you in the language you choose to learn, quicker and easier than you ever imagined to. Maybe you're getting ready to travel abroad this summer and you want to learn a bit of Portuguese, let's say, before your trip. Rosetta Stone can help. I know this firsthand as I did just this before traveling to Portugal last year. I learned Portuguese through Rosetta Stone, and by doing so, I not only got a better grasp of the spoken language of Portugal, but it got me very excited for the trip itself before I went. They even have a true accent feature that gives you feedback on your pronunciation as you are learning too. They've got you covered. Rosetta Stone's trusted experts are the real deal. They've been helping people just like you for over 30 years. Helping millions of people to learn Spanish, French, Italian, German, Korean, Chinese, Japanese, Dutch, Arabic, Polish, and my favorite, Portuguese. The lessons are 5 to 10 minutes long and include practical exercises so that you can pick up the language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. No English translations either, so you really learn to speak, listen, and think in the language you are focused on, helping you get the long term retention you are looking for. And who wouldn't want that? Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, the Kara Golden Show listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off, unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today today. In today's world, which I will admit can at times seem filled with too much of the wrong information, it's essential to find a good source that truly gets to the heart of what I want to know. I am super excited about our next sponsor, as I've been a big fan of their content for some time now. That sponsor is The Washington Post. Their depth on topics from business to tech isn't just impressive, it's essential reading for me. Whether I'm catching up on the latest tech trends or understanding how the day's news truly impacts my family, The Washington Post is my trusted source. Let's talk specifics. Their business and tech coverage, absolutely top-notch. Just imagine having the most insightful articles at your fingertips, including the unparalleled AI reporting from Drew Harwell, or the pulse on tech and online culture from Taylor Lorenz. And the best part? You can listen to articles just like you listen to this podcast, making it perfect for your busy lifestyle. I was just reading an article from one of my favorite Washington Post writers, Frances Stead Sellers. She covers entrepreneurs like myself, but also covers other interesting topics, including health, as well as some very interesting books. I also love getting their For You newsletter, which is their roundup of stories tailored just for my interests, right in my inbox every evening. The Washington Post app is super well done, I think. It makes it incredibly easy to stay up to date and follow my favorite journalists on the go. And if you ever thought that the Washington Post is just about politics, think again. They cover everything under the sun, from climate and culture to crosswords and cooking, providing a world of surprising stories and vital insights. Okay, enough of the love fest that I have for the Washington Post. Here's the deal. Being a listener of the Kara Golden Show has its benefits, and this one is too good to miss. Now is the time to sign up for the Washington Post. Go to washingtonpost.com/Kara Golden to subscribe for just 50 cents per week for your first year. That's 80% off their typical offer. So this is truly a steal. Once again, that's washingtonpost.com/Kara Golden to subscribe for just 50 cents per week for your first year.
What I put together was we really reimagined what home care could look like by making it a better experience through great design and high sustainability. And of course, then we brought fragrance and all the ways to make the chore of cleaning, you know, a little less of a chore.
Mm-hmm. No, incredible. And then you sold Method. Like how many years later? I always like to share this with entrepreneurs who think that they're going to, you know, flip a company and, you know, a couple months or, you know, it's all going to be great.
Every overnight success story is 10 years, right? For us, it was about 12 years to liquidity. It's funny too, like every year sold, I hate the phrase sold because I feel like it's like selling out. Mm-hmm. I just think of it more of we recapitalized the company with a larger sponsor to really scale it to the next stage and help fill more of its potential.
It's amazing. It's such a great, great story. So the biggest lesson you learned while running Method?
God, so many lessons because we made so many mistakes. You know, we were absolute rookies at this. We didn't know how to make a product, how to sell a product. And we were just very fortunate that all of our dumb mistakes, none of them killed us along the way. But I think the biggest for me was just the power of culture. And I came out of advertising where culture is really, really important because your people are your assets. And so you try to create a culture that allows you to recruit the best talent, unleash their ability, but also in a place that clients want to come spend time. You know, you're kind of the cool kids in the world of marketing. So I kind of just took that for granted that, of course, you know, when you build great companies, you build great cultures. And in the beginning, we always said we had the secret sauce, but nobody had the recipe. How to really scale a culture and nurture it. For me was the biggest lesson I learned that at the end of the day, your culture really is your only competitive advantage.
Yeah, that's awesome. And you had built an amazing, amazing culture. So I think it's also in a city like San Francisco too, where, you know, you're competing against tech companies that are also really interested in having lots of, perks, right? So you guys did an incredible job of that. And I met many people along the way who loved working for you at Method for sure.
Yeah, you get Tom Fishburne on, one of my favorite people I've ever had the opportunity of working with. But no, and it's, I think also what's rewarding is how many people left Method to go on to start their own companies or do really, really great things. And it was a testament to how lucky we were of the quality of talent we had at that time.
Well, I think you speak to something that is, you know, definitely near and dear to my heart is that, you know, so many people have left Chant over the years and then they've gone on to do really, really great things too. And I think, you know, I think when you first get your first person to leave, you know, I took it personally, right? Like, did you do something wrong? Right. And then you see that, you know, you're actually creating and growing these amazing people that maybe later you find out, you know, that they're going off and doing even better things than what they were doing when they first left your company. But how do you feel about that as well?
as a founder, I think that the two kind of hardest moments is, you know, losing talent either because it's your choice or their choice. Mm-hmm. So when someone resigns to me, the first thing I always do is try to put them at ease and say, congrats. And really, you know, because you know that they are just like, especially if they've been with you for a long time, it is so hard for them and they are so nervous to resign. Mm-hmm. And so the first thing I always do is put somebody at ease, tell them congrats, and remind them at the end of the day, everybody's got to do what's right for their career and their family. And I fully honor and appreciate that. And I immediately, you know, of course, you want to see if there's anything you can do to retain them. But assuming that's not the case, you know, I always immediately am just incredibly gracious for their contribution of what they've done. And my attitude is it's not goodbye. It's see you later.
Yeah.
And hopefully we'll have the opportunity to work together again. And I've now had that on multiple. I've got, one person I've worked with at three companies now.
That's amazing.
And so I think at the end of the day, as a founder and a leader, it's most important to always support people and what's right for them. And always a lot easier than being on the other side when they're leaving, but it's not their choice.
Yeah.
Those are usually the hardest moments, I think, as a founder.
No, definitely. So you have created amazing, amazing, memorable design in all of the products that you've been involved in that you've co-founded. So after Method, you went on to Ollie and then Welly. What is the importance of design in products? I mean, how do you, when people are coming up with design for products, I mean, how much time should they spend on making sure that it's right?
I mean, I will argue in all the companies I've started, design is the number one competitive advantage. Mm-hmm. I am such a huge geek on the application of design, particularly within consumer products. And, you know, what I love about the power of design, you know, look, think about the phrase, seeing is believing. The great design allows you to immediately, you know, reframe a category, experience, and it's instant, right? The second a consumer sees it or experiences it, that feeling is there. And nothing has the power to create an emotional connection as quick and as deep as great design. It just blows me away, you know, whether you're walking a grocery store or just looking at, you know, any category, how much crappy design there is out there or how unconsidered things are. And so it's so easy to really invest in empower great creatives to disrupt the category. We live in a digital world where that entire visual expression is nothing but design. So yeah, it's our number one competitive advantage. I look to create companies where I know I can leverage design to really break through.
The CFOs that get it, get it. And the CFOs that don't, don't. Let's talk about the CFO, the Chief Financial Officer. Today's CFO is critical to the strategy and success of the business. And in growing companies, there are two kinds of CFOs. One who's struggling to keep up, spreadsheets everywhere, manual processes, errors, and lack of visibility into the numbers. And it takes weeks to close those books. The other kind is on top of their game. Automated reporting, inventory, e-commerce, and HR flow into the financial model seamlessly, and insights coming in with the click of a button. NetSuite is the perfect program to help you manage your business better, whether it's financial modeling or inventory management. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system that provides everything you need to grow your business, all in one place. With NetSuite, you can automate your processes and close your books on time. From HR to budgeting to financials, NetSuite is the platform for scaling your business. Over 29,000 businesses already use NetSuite. Head to netsuite.com/Kara for special one-of-a-kind financing offer. That's netsuite.com/Kara, netsuite.com/Kara. I totally agree with you. I mean, I think even, you know, when we were launching Hint, we have a patent on this bottle that, you know, again, it may not look like a totally different bottle to a lot of people, but the feel and the touch of it and all of those things, the wider mouth, all of those things were things that we just geeked out on that we didn't, you know, you don't get an opportunity to really talk about that necessarily in when you are talking about your company every single day. But I believe me, I know as a founder and as somebody, as a creator, where those things, I totally agree with you, so important. So let's talk about CAST. So what is CAST?
So CAST goes back to my model, which is I look for these like really big categories that I think have missed a cultural shift. And I've always dreamed of actually, you know, I've been working for years with retailers like Target, and I've always dreamed of being the retailer, which is a little bit of, you know, the grass is always greener. Mm-hmm. And, but just the idea to fully own that experience and expression. So when a consumer walks in the door, the light, the scent, the music, the touch, the fact that you can control that entire experience, like to me, that's a challenge I always wanted to take on. And we did some really cool pop shops. We were way ahead of our time on method. And those were always some of my favorite kind of marketing moments is when we were building physical retail. So I've never walked into a jewelry store and felt like it was a great experience. Mm-hmm. The salesperson is very much in control. They're on the other side of the counter. All information comes out of their mouth. And of course, if you want to know the price, they have to go flip over like the world's smallest price tag. And then you have to give a reaction to, oh, is that 1,000 or 20,000? So I just, you know, shopping for jewelry, I always thought whether it's for yourself or for a gift should be one of the best retail experiences. And the reality is it's the worst retail experience. And so that was the kind of the clue to dig here. We launched online in October, and we're in the process of getting ready to open up our first physical store, which will actually be here in Marin. I want it to be in our backyard. It's our, you know, first Tinker store. But it's going to go into the village of Corte Madera where the former La Cetane was.
Oh,
and
okay.
I am a little bit late this summer, and I am just so excited to like actually try being the retailer.
That's amazing. And so are you actually creating the jewelry then, or are you bringing everyone else's jewelry into a space?
No, thankfully, I am not designing jewelry, nor should I ever be near it. You know, the real insight here is that the growth in fine jewelry is being driven by women self-purchasing. But yet you still have these, you know, pretty, you know, dusted luxury brands that still treat jewelry as a gift to be given most frequently from a man to a woman as an expression of love. Mm-hmm. So the model that we're doing is it's really about creating a playground for women for self-purchasing fine jewelry. And the way the product's been brought to life is we're working with all independent women jewelry designers, and everything is essentially, it's all under our brand, but each one is packaged into a different story that's been designed by this jewelry designer. And I think where we're getting really excited too is we're going to start working with our first women artists who have not been in the medium of jewelry. So Wendy Chin, a great San Francisco artist here, she does these, you know, amazing rope installations. So she's never done jewelry before, and we're translating her work into jewelry. Because at the end of the day, jewelry is just really wearable art. It's the ultimate expression of creativity and artistry. And so that's a huge part of what CAST is about, is really bringing this to life for women.
That's incredible. So you talked about stories a little bit, and obviously the stories behind the brand on some of the brands that you've been involved with to date. What do you think the importance is of stories to consumers? I think you've shown us that design is really critical, but how do you think stories fall into it?
The most impactful way to communicate as human beings is through the power of story, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, you're in the communication business as well, and you know that if you really want to motivate somebody and connect with them deeply, the power of story is always the best approach. And you and I come from these like really basic categories, you know, like doing soap and vitamins and bandages and like not a lot of opportunity for story. So we've had to work really, really hard to bring forward great stories. And, you know, Method was a great story. You had, you know, two guys who were not known for their cleanliness living in a dirty flat in San Francisco to try to you know, create a cleaning revolution. Like, that was a great story and a very authentic one as well. So I've always just been a huge fan of great storytelling when you're building a brand. And that was part of the attraction of Cast, is people buy and wear jewelry for great stories. Like, think about your favorite pieces. There's a story connected to that. And so I saw it as a much richer area to build a brand and do it through great storytelling. And as you, even if you go on our site today and, you know, like the Italian heist and this idea that we have a getaway ring that flips four different ways. So we're really trying to infuse story into everything that we do.
Yeah, no, I see it. And I think you guys have done a great job. And I'm so excited to see where Cast goes with this, because I see the nuggets of how different this is than what anyone else has done in that industry. So one of the questions that I ask of every founder and CEO is to share a story, really a challenge or a failure along the way where you were, you know, you thought, this is it, we're done. You know, and we've all had them, right? Where it's either funding or kicked out. In our case, we were kicked out of Starbucks after a year and a half, you know, where we had all this product that was going to go bad. I mean, all of these like different stories along the way, but I'd love to hear one of your stories and what was the ultimate lesson that was learned from the experience.
You know, I'll give you the choice, because every company I founded, other than Welly, because that's kind of started off a little bit more as a side project, but the three companies I founded so far, all of them ended up having to handle a crisis. So I'll give you the choice. So we've got Method, 9/11. We've got Ollie in the middle of a divorce for myself. And we've got Cast with the plan to launch pre-COVID physical retail. So I'll give you the choice. You pick the brand, I'll give you the story.
Method.
All right. So, you know, Method is such an unlikely story. At the time, it was unheard of to launch a CPG brand and, you know, do it quickly with scale. So the one of the crises, there's many crises through getting Method off the ground, but probably the best one was when we launched at Target. So when we first approached Target, we kind of piggybacked off a distributor to get a meeting. And at the end of the pitch, the buyer, who is pretty senior, it's like, yeah, it's like, guys, he's like, I don't know. It's like, I just don't get it. He's like, I don't like the name. I don't like the colors. I'm not sure the size of the bottle is right. He's like, I hate to say it, but it's a snowball's chance in hell. So we were like dumb and dumber. You're like, so you're saying there's a chance? And, you know, one of the first lessons as an entrepreneur is like, you know, the road forward, I think, often always looks less scary than the road backwards. You know, you've committed so much. And so we were dead in the water. And the problem was, we just raised our Series A. We shot off our mouth saying that we would get Target. You know, they're about design, we're about design. We couldn't see why they wouldn't want to work with us. And we really could not see a way to scale this business without a national player. Grocery and drug is a very expensive class of trade. And we were pretty much losing money on every bottle we made at this point. We were priced pretty high. So we just started working with Karen Rashid, who's, you know, very famous industrial designer. I knew Target had an interest in working with them. So I used Karen to get a meeting with Target marketing, who then on top of it invited the buyers to come, who came pretty, you know, disgruntled, because we essentially went over their head. And we really laid out, you know, we made a huge investment with Karen, and we just designed our entire vision for where we thought we could take this category. And we got, you know, with any success story, there were so many lucky breaks. And one of them was that somebody in the meeting from marketing, her name was Sally Mueller, she stood up at the end. She's like, this is perfect. She's like, it's great for our guests. It's not like laid out the case. So the buyers had no choice but to give us a test. So they gave us a 90-store test, Chicago area in Northern California. And they're like, all you have to do, they put us on end cap. They're like, hit this number and you're good to go.
Well, week after week, we're missing the number. And one of our big challenges where we launched this beautiful Karen Rashid dish soap that came out the bottom. And unfortunately, it wasn't designed quite right. So when consumers were trying to smell it, the cap wasn't going back on. So we were like raining dish soap over everything. So I spent weeks driving from Target store to Target store, cleaning up dish soap, passing out coupons, doing everything we could to make it work. And we were just, you know, badly missing the number that we needed to move forward. So at the end of the test, Target asked us to come see them. I'm like, oh my God, we're like, we're dead in the water. I can't believe they're going to make us fly there just to tell us we're out. And again, another lucky break. A new buyer came on the desk. She saw how incremental we were. She saw how profitable we were. And she gave us national distribution. And, you know, Target, God, will probably do almost $200 million in sales of Method this year. It's just been an incredible success story. And the lesson was just persistence. Like we believed in our vision. We just stayed persistent. And a lot of times, you know, with launching a company, every day you're alive is a day you're winning and just building momentum. And it's a cliche of, you know, you've been there, you know, it's a cliche of startups, but persistence, you know, at the end of the day is really your best friend in success here.
Yeah. Well, I think there's two lessons. Staying alive is, you know, part of, I think, being successful, right? And that's, and however you can do that, whether it's, you know, funding or, you know, making sure that you have products that consumers want, right? All of those things, but also buyer changes happen all the time, right? Good and bad. And it's, I remember years ago, somebody said, you know, never get kicked out of a Target or Walmart or any of this. I mean, you know, there's been times when we haven't been able to work things out. You've got to do what's right for your business. And you go on the sidelines for a while and then you come back in. And I think that is a lesson that so many entrepreneurs can learn from. But did she know that you guys had, you know, soap running all over the shelves and that?
Oh, of course not.
Of course not.
We did that the best we could. It's also a good lesson to nail it before you scale it You know, unfortunately we weren't going to get that distribution without that product. I mean, we literally, had our first working product, you know, moments before shipping it. So not ideal, but if we'd not taken a risk with that design, we would never have gotten distribution. So, yeah, as an entrepreneur, you know, every day you just try to stay in the game that opens up opportunities for luck. And just keep pushing your learning.
People always ask me when raising money, you know, and you've done it a few times with all of your brands. I mean, what do you think is like the key thing that you've learned about, you know, your decks, your, you know, your pitches, the investors, all of those things? Like what would you say to a friend who's starting out and doing their first, like, what do you look for? Or what do you really want to get across? I mean, it is a story, right? Talking about storytelling. I mean, what do you want to get out there for that person?
I'm kind of a weirdo in this way. I love raising capital. I like to get my inner Don Draper on and really go out and pitch and sell a story.
Eric, you are sick. Like I have never heard a founder say this, and it's a great, great thing. I love it.
But as you know, like when you're raising capital, every meeting is a good meeting. And it's like Hollywood, like nobody wants to risk, you know, missing out. But at the same time, very few are, you know, committed to moving forward. So I think one of my secrets is to try to avoid asking for the money. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a little bit of what Madoff did, right? You don't ask for the money. Mm-hmm. You have to create a sense of scarcity value. Like fundraising is very psychological and you have to create a sense of, you know, confidence, momentum to be able to get on, you know, investors to come in. So one of the things I do, I mean, I obsess over, you know, pitch decks and stories and, you know, how do you tell the story? But I think two things I try to do is, you know, one, I'm really open, honest, authentic. Like I don't go in trying to sell. the way I always think about it is, you know, the act of fundraising is the real gift of it is not trying to prove yourself, but improve yourself. It gives you the opportunity to put your plan in front of a lot of smart people. And the gift of that feedback is what allows you to make that plan smarter and smarter. So I go into fundraising, not trying to sell somebody on why you should come in, much more on like a debrief. I'm sharing you my plan. Here's how we're thinking about it. I would love your feedback, good, bad. You know, we're smart enough to know that we're not smart enough that this is right. So I always go into fundraising trying to improve myself more than prove myself to get the capital. And then I usually try to avoid asking directly, and I more lay out, here's the type of investor we're looking for. Because at the end of the day, if they're interested in investing, of course, they're going to, you know, initiate that. So you don't have to ask for the money. It's much more about exposing yourself to as many people as possible, telling a great story, getting feedback, and then the right people, you know, will come forward to participate in the round.
When you say type of investor, what is your favorite type of investor these days? Does it depend based on all of your different investments, or what would you say, knowing you've dealt with a lot of different investors? What is the favorite?
Yeah. So the track record, if you lined up the cap tables of all the companies I've started, almost everybody on that cap table is either a former or current operator. Mm-hmm. And for me, I learned this really early on. When I was pitching Method, I think it was Jim McCain at 1-800-Flowers. It was a big deal for me. You know, I was in my 20s and like, you know, the founder of 1-800-Flowers, like I have this pitch with him. And I remember him looking me in the eyes and I realized he's not judging my plan. He's judging me. And he's trying to decide, regardless of my plan, if he backs me, am I going to figure out how to make this successful? And then I pitched Howard Schultz and I had the same reaction to him from him. I realized like they were so much more focused on me than the plan. Where when we were pitching professional investors who had never operated before, they would go so deep into the plan. And you know, the plan's fiction. Like the one thing I can tell you is like, this plan won't happen. We'll either beat it or I'll miss it. And I realized the lesson very early now as an investor myself, that as a founder, the plan's never going to get executed the way you think it is. You've got to just be so open-minded to take advantage of the learning and adjust along the way. And it's really the people you support. So I really understand the value of surrounding myself with great operators who are going to get in the trenches with you and help you solve how to make this business successful along the way.
No, I think that's critical. And also know that, you know, you can paint the crystal ball or the canvas, but there's things that are going to happen along the way that as long as you know why they happened and what you learn from them along the way, that and how you're pivoting and all of those things, I think it's really, really, really critical. So incredible. I mean, you are just a wealth of knowledge and learnings for sure, and have built incredible, successful brands. I can't wait to see Cast, and we'll definitely come into the store when it opens. You said late summer.
Late summer. It's so funny, as you know, like we're so used to shipping products to major retailers, and like when you're actually building a store, particularly with COVID supply chain, how slow the whole thing moves. But yes, we are targeting late summer, and cannot wait to open those doors.
That's amazing. Are you still involved in the other brands?
So I continue to work with Unilever, and I'm a really close partner with them. I'm working across their entire health and wellness collective. I could not have asked for a better partner in Unilever. They've been fantastic. So yeah, Ollie and Welly, I'm still very, very involved with, but I root very loudly for Method, but no longer involved.
Not involved in it. Well, amazing things are going on, and definitely you are one to follow for sure. So thank you. Where do people follow you, by the way, on social? And hopefully you'll write another book at some point and share some more of your stories too. But where do people follow you?
You know, I've done an absolute terrible job of social media. So I'm going to get back into it. But I've been so busy between chasing kids and building companies that I've been completely off social media. I am not a
I'm not normal that way, but I'm going to get back to it.
Well, we will follow you in the brands along the way.
Exactly. I'd rather you follow the brands than me.
Absolutely.
You're the real star.
Thanks so much. And thanks everybody for listening. Definitely check out Eric's newest company, Cast. And don't forget to subscribe to The Kara Golden Show, where we have incredible guests, including people like Eric, who are creators, disruptors, CEOs who are doing amazing things that we can all learn from and have great stories to share with everybody. Definitely give this episode 5 stars. It makes a huge difference in the algorithm. And we are now in the top 1% of entrepreneur podcasts throughout the world, which is so, so cool. I can be found on all social platforms at Kara Golden. If you haven't picked up my book or downloaded it, it's called Undaunted, Overcoming Doubts and Doubters. Also, my company that I founded, Hint. Hopefully, you'll get a chance to have one of those waters. And we're here every Monday, Wednesday, and now added Friday to the lineup. So hopefully you'll be listening and we'll hear from you and all of that kind of stuff. So thanks again, Eric. And thanks everyone for listening. And goodbye for now.
Thanks, everybody.
Before we sign off, I want to talk to you about fear. People like to talk about fearless leaders, but achieving big goals isn't about fearlessness. Successful leaders recognize their fears and decide to deal with them head on in order to move forward. This is where my new book, Undaunted, comes in. This book is designed for anyone who wants to succeed in the face of fear, overcome doubts, and live a little undaunted. Order your copy today at undauntedthebook.com and learn how to look your doubts and doubters in the eye and achieve your dreams. For a limited time, you'll also receive a free case of Hint Water. Do you have a question for me or want to nominate an innovator to spotlight? Send me a tweet at Kara Golden and let me know. And if you like what you heard, please leave me a review on Apple Podcasts. You can also follow along with me on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn at Kara Golden. Thanks for listening.